When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi there, I'm Alice Oliver. You're listening to Just Films and That, the podcast that celebrates films we think might be underrated or underseen. This week, it was Josh's turn to pick the film, and he went with Scooby-Doo from 2002. So let's get to it. So then, Josh, Scooby-Doo from 2002. Why did you pick Scooby-Doo from 2002? And what is it about?
Well, what is the film Scooby-Doo from 2002 about? Well, basically, it's a film adaptation of the very famous cartoons featuring a talking dog and his friend in the 60s that go around solving mysteries. I'm not going to go into it any more than that. Spoiler warnings if you've not seen the film Scooby-Doo. Why did I pick this? Have to excuse me, by the way, everybody. I've got a little bit of a cold. So why did I pick this? So it's 20 years old this year. Which,
happy
first of all,
birthday.
That hit me like an absolute train, because I was like, I remember going to see this at the cinema and it feels like about 5 years ago. But anyway, so it's 20 years old.
It wasn't released yesterday. What is this nonsense?
So I think I had a couple of other films I was going to pick before, but then I saw it and everyone was celebrating the fact that it had come out 20 years ago. A lot of people, you know, about our age, sort of with a lot of fond memories about this film. So because I saw that going round, I went on and had a look at the critical reception. And I was really quite taken aback with how poorly it was received. And then I started reading more about it, about how, like, some of the cast disowned it and said that they wished they'd never made it and all this.
Is Scooby-Doo Grease 2, could you say?
Right, that's a yellow card. Right?
All right, sorry, yeah. No more. But, you know, Michelle Pfeiffer said she hated Grease 2 and
she
thought it was six. Maybe it's a similar...
Exactly.
Maybe Scooby-Doo has been influenced by the Grease 2 effect, which is what we'll call that from now on.
The Grease 2 effect.
Yes.
Anyway, so that's why I picked it. So I picked it, I suppose, I wouldn't say it's underseen, but I would say it's underrated, having looked at the critical reception then. I've got a lot of affection for this film. Like, I remember it very fondly. I'm watching it again. I saw stuff I'd not seen before as an adult. Yeah. I started appreciating stuff that I'd not seen before, and I just had a great time. Had you seen it before?
I had seen it before. And Josh, it was on my list.
What?
Yeah,
that's,
man,
the second time this has happened. So it was the Enduring Love and then this.
I know, what a mix, right? But you know what's funny? It's only recently on my list. But whereas I think, obviously, you've been influenced, you know, you see in the media and the hype around it because it was the anniversary. For me, I literally think, so I've been thinking about the musical episode of Buffy for quite a long time.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And like, I'm just desperate to go back and watch it. So then I've been thinking about Sarah Michelle Gellar a lot. And then this film just popped into my head and I was like, you know what? I remember seeing that as a kid and I remember enjoying it and having, like you said, just a really good time whilst watching it. So I couldn't really remember what it was about. Obviously, I know the general idea, but I couldn't remember any of the actual plot points or the narrative drivers, shall we say. All I remembered was the feeling I had of watching it. And that was a
once
good
more with
feeling.
Feeling.
Exactly.
I've not even seen Buffy. I just know that's the title of the episode.
Oh my God, it's sick.
I've only seen the musical episode of Buffy. It's the only episode of Buffy I've ever seen.
It's epic. You always
and I don't
see
even
these
know
ridiculous,
why.
You see these ridiculous articles that are like, oh, you know a show is failing when they do a musical episode. And I'm like, are you taking the piss? The musical episode of Buffy is a masterpiece.
But wasn't Buffy like one of the first ones to do it? So that was before. See, I always think it's when a sitcom does it that you know it's going down the pan, whereas Buffy actually gave it a, you know, there was an idea behind the Buffy one, wasn't there? Like, it made sense. But then there are other stuff as well that have done musical, like the musical episode of Scrubs, I think, is quite good.
Yeah, brilliant. I think there's a couple of How I Met Your Mother, or there's at least a couple of musical numbers in them. You get musical numbers in The Simpsons, which
Family Guy
really
does it
good.
All the time.
Family Guy does it all the time, and they're always brilliant. I am here for the musical episode. Anyway, back to what we're here to talk about. So
back to Scooby-Doo.
Scooby-Doo was on my list. Scooby-Doo from 2002 was on my list also.
Is it Scooby-Doo 2 or Scooby-Doo 1? That doesn't rhyme with anything.
Just Scooby-Doo 1. I don't think I've seen the second one.
I don't think I've seen the second one.
No. So, yeah, only good feelings going into this. And I almost squealed with delight when I saw that you were choosing this. So, let's get to it, Josh. Watching it this time around, what are your thoughts? What did you like about it?
Do you know what? I still loved it. I still had a really great time with it. And looking at it with a critical eye only gave me more appreciation for how the film made me feel as an audience member. Because I enjoyed it as a kid. And you enjoy it as a kid because, you know, there's a Scooby-Doo CGI dog running around getting into hijinks, and there's a lot of slapstick stuff in there, and Scooby and Shaggy are funny. As an adult, I had a whole new appreciation for just how layered with weird adult jokes this film is.
Oh, yeah.
To the point, like more than any other film I've ever seen, like there's so many knob jokes in there. And they like they definitely don't shy away from the fact that Scooby and Shaggy are stoners and that sort of thing. So breaking it down, what did I like? So looking at it, trying it with a more critical eye, the performances.
I think top notch.
So well cast.
Oh, mate, my first point is literally that the casting in this
perfect.
Is flawless. Perfect. Absolutely flawless. Go on.
So
you got
Matthew Lillard in there as Shaggy, who is so good as Shaggy that I think he now does like, or has done, the voice of the cartoon.
That sounds about right. Got, and if not, then he definitely should be.
Yeah, you've got Sarah Michelle Gellar as Daphne kicking ass.
He's just wonderful. Like,
so one of the things, which I'll come on to in a minute, one of the things they do is they subvert the idea of Scooby-Doo. They take what Scooby-Doo is as an idea and all the things everybody knows about Scooby-Doo, and they flip some of them on the head. So Daphne is always known as being the damsel in distress, and she doesn't want to be taken as just someone who's always getting captured. So she goes away, and she essentially comes back as, guess what, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, except it's
Hell
monsters
yeah.
or whatever. So she's really good in it, perfect cast. Freddie Prinze Jr., I've not seen him in much, to be
not
honest,
much,
other than
man,
this.
No,
and I think,
not much at all.
Is he in one of the like, it's like a She's All That or something like that? I think he's in.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
She's
is
All
it She's
That.
All
he's,
That? Yeah.
He's the male lead in that.
Very handsome man. You know, he's just a handsome man. But to play Fred in this, because again, in the cartoon, Fred is the leader. He's the handsome, intelligent one. In this, he's just thick.
Oh, but it's so funny.
He's just
he's
thick.
So funny, isn't he?
Yeah. And I just found that so funny. And then my favorite is Linda Cardellini as Velma. I think she's brilliant. I think she's so funny. I think she's quite underrated as an actor as well. You know, she crops up in stuff from time to time. Like, she's Hawkeye's wife in the MCU, and she's done a couple of other bits where she's really good in it. But she's great in this. Like, to play Velma, like, and they all are so cartoon accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily in the way the characters are, because like I said, Fred changes from being the leader to being thick, and Daphne changes a little bit. But in the imitation, it could have been so shit. Mm-hmm. Like, the imitation could have been so shit. And it's not, like, the way that Linda Cardellini does the really nasally, like, my glasses, you know, like, the stuff that everybody knows, and jinkies and all that.
Yeah.
I think it's brilliant. I think it's so well cast. And you've got other people around it as well. Obviously, you've got Rowan Atkinson in there as the sort of villain. Other people in there as well. Oh, it's so well cast, Alice. Might be the best cast film we've done.
I totally agree. And that's just so funny that was literally my first and my most leading point as well, because I just couldn't fault it. Obviously, Freddie Prinze Jr. and Matthew Lillard are so funny. Sarah Michelle Gellar and Linda Cardellini, like you say, they're really endearing and really likable.
Yeah.
So Shaggy is obviously, like, he seems a tad useless as a detective, but he has so much heart and warmth emanating from him. And I just feel like Lillard gets it right with his performance. Fred, it was so much funnier than I remember. He has some terrific one-liners and great comic timing as well.
Dorky chicks says, like you turn me on
that's
too.
Exactly, yeah, that was exactly what I was going to say. He says at one point, like near the beginning, to a group of reporters and paparazzi, it's like, oh yeah, I did a lot of the teamwork. And then, the iconic line, I'm a man of substance, dorky girls like you turn me on too. And it's weird because he's so incredibly arrogant and borderline narcissistic, but not in a mean or obnoxious way.
No, just like he's like a sort of lovable, stupid jock, isn't he?
Yeah, even though a lot of the stuff he's saying, I think maybe from a different actor or in a different script would come across as like either really patronizing or just gross and really offensive, but it just isn't coming from him. And I feel like Freddie Prinze Jr. himself is a huge part of that. Mm. Also, shout out to Matthew Lillard, who spends most of the film acting alongside a CGI dog, right? Yeah. Which can't have been easy, but you totally believe their friendship and their affection for one another. And I feel like all the actors understood the assignment, even the extras and the side characters. It's like everyone was in on it and everyone was in that world. Yeah, brilliant.
It's so perfectly cast. What else? So back to what I was saying there, the whole execution of the concept and the script as well. Now, so it's written by James Gunn, who most people will know as the director of Guardians of the Galaxy and the Suicide Squad. He's made a name for himself for having, you know, essentially being a brilliant director, being able to give life to stuff. And he is fantastic. If you haven't watched Peacemaker, which is the TV series that he did with John Cena on the back of the Suicide Squad, it is well worth a watch. It's really, really funny. And he brings this to life so well in the way it's written, like the way it subverts the idea. So essentially, it's framed like a traditional Scooby-Doo episode, except the monsters are real. So in other Scooby-Doo episodes, it's, you know, there's a ghost haunting a factory or there's a sludge monster haunting a swamp. And actually, it's not. It's someone in a suit or a costume using special
it's
effects.
It's Old Man Withers from the old amusement park.
And that's how it opens, isn't it? It's like, it's Old Man Smithers or whatever. Yeah. And that's what you think of. And I would have got away with it too if it wasn't for those pesky kids and all that. Except in this, it's not that. It's real monsters. So you have the mystery gang going up against real monsters, thinking that they're actually just blokes in costumes and all that sort of thing. Yeah. So I love the idea of the way they flip that on the head and went, no, actually, it's real monsters. Other stuff as well, like the way that they, you know, they're all dressed like they are in the cartoons. It's not set in the 60s. Like, it must be set in when it was made, right? It's set in like 2002. People have mobile phones. There's like all the clothes and all the hair and all that is 2002, except for them who were just dressed like that in the 60s. Never explained. And I just think that's beautiful.
A bit like the Brady Bunch.
It was a lot like the Brady Bunch. Just like, don't explain it.
Don't explain it. Don't ask. You know, you want to see the costumes. Here they are.
You want to see the ascot. You want to see the green t-shirt and the beige and the beige cords and all that. Scrappy-Doo being the villain and not actually being a puppy, but having a gland disorder. I found that so funny. Again, they don't shy away from the cartoony elements. They still have Scooby jumping into Shaggy's arms. They still have like Zoinks and Jinkies and all
Scooby
that.
Scooby snacks, yeah.
And then on top of that, you've got loads of adult jokes in there. So, like, you know, it's clear that when you first see Scooby and Shaggy after the initial opening scene, that they're baked. Like, because he, I think Shaggy says something like, talk about toasted or talk about baked or something like that. Never goes, doesn't spoon feed you. Do you know what I mean? Doesn't go, you're smoking a spliff here. Like,
but
everyone knows that from the 60s because of the way that it was written, the way it was drawn. Like I said before, a lot of knob jokes and a lot of like, sex related jokes in there. Like, there's a bit where Shaggy is talking to them all, saying, we're like a big sundae, ice cream sundae. And he goes, Fred, you're like the big banana. And Fred, like, goes, yeah, it's my knob. Like, like, the look on his face. There's loads of them. There's like weird jokes in there, like, Daphne's speaking to a guy doing voodoo and he goes, don't you know purple's a fall colour? And it's like, proper stuff that like completely went over my head when I was 11.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it now going like, a lot of penis stuff in there.
Yeah, that's funny.
About you? So what did you like about it?
So I feel like the CGI, you know, it was very ambitious and it's not too bad. And because of the overtop and cartoon-like feel of the whole thing, you can almost get away with it a bit more when the CGI isn't up to scratch. So a bit like the sharks in Deep Blue Sea, right? So the naffness of the CGI just kind of works in the context of the film. And then just bouncing off that point, I thought some of the monster design was really good as well. Like the way they designed the monsters. It wasn't really like anything I'd ever seen, and it wasn't your traditional, like, I thought it was just going to be like a sort of yeti, like big bear-like thing. But, you know, they weren't.
And it never says what they are, does it? It doesn't say like they're aliens, they're just there. They're just monsters.
What a mystery. If only we could hire someone. There's so many classic cartoon gags in there as well. Now, I haven't actually seen a great deal of Scooby-Doo, but, you know, I get the idea. I've seen Wayne's World. Let's do the Scooby-Doo ending. Good call. Diddle-oo, diddle-oo, diddle-oo. You know, I get it, right? So we see the gang, like, hiding within, like, these costumes in a sort of life-size display sort of thing in this, like, this little theme park ghosty house area so they don't get found by the bad guys. You've also got Scooby-Doo hiding inside a suitcase trying to roll away with his little toes sticking out, like trying to push him along. And this worked really well with the more kind of mystery and horror elements to it as well. And it just, I thought it blended together really well. I thought it did a good job of bringing you into the film. And even though a lot of it was absurd and wacky, I wasn't sat there scratching my head going like, oh, but why did this happen? Why did that happen? Like, it just washed over me in just like a big Scooby-Doo bonanza
just
accept of colour and
you just
action.
Accept it.
Yeah. The pace was really good as well.
Yeah,
you know?
It's only
it
like an hour
really
and a half.
Dropped.
Bang, bang
perfect.
On. Perfect.
It's
like
what
that.
We want, lads. It's what we want.
And like you say, it's really, it's like, it's amazingly self-referential as well. Mm-hmm. So like, it almost knows it's an adaptation of a cartoon. So you get things where it's like, we're going to go into the spooky house. And Shaggy's saying, if you go into the spooky house, there's statues with eyes that follow you and like, and all that sort of stuff. And it's like, they don't know that in the cartoon, but in the film, they don't shy away from.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Just embracing what it is, I guess. Mm-hmm. I think I've never seen any, like, there's been other examples of, like, adaptations of cartoons into live action which haven't been very well received. But I think this has got to be up there with one of the best.
It's so bold, isn't it? And it is so ambitious. Like, how often do you see that, where we're trying to adapt a cartoon into live action? And the way they did it, I do think it was just perfect. And like you say, if it had tried to be, I guess, exactly like the cartoon and maybe a bit more serious and taking itself a bit more seriously, then maybe it would have flopped, or maybe, you know, I could understand the not so positive reception to it. But oh, I just thought it was so funny. I just had such a good time. So we'll move on now then to talk about anything that we perhaps didn't like about the film or anything we would change. And I don't feel like Josh's list is very long here, but go on, Josh. Could you find anything in all
not,
the joy?
Not loads. Some of this is like, I suppose some of this is my personal preference, which I'll come on to. Yeah. I didn't think the CGI was that good, particularly in places. But is that because it's the time? I'm not too sure. Because I always come back to, yeah, the CGI is not great, but how could it be shit when something comes after Terminator 2, right? But Terminator 2 sort of stands alone as its own thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of other films in between Terminator 2 and this that have terrible CGI, so I don't know if that's a fair comment. I don't really know what the budget was like. I don't really know what they were working with, but I must say some of the CGI, particularly like towards the end when Scrappy is turning into the big monster thing. But do you know what? It's a kid's film. It's a family film. I wasn't that bothered, you know. I've just always
didn't throw you out of the world, did it?
The other thing as well, before I come on to my main point, was we don't see them. There's a lot in there about how they were a great team and working as a team and what a great team we are. But actually, we don't ever see that.
Okay.
And I think I'd have liked maybe a bit at the beginning where we saw them work more as a team. But I understand that you don't necessarily have to give us everything, you know. It's not lacking for that, but I do think for the amount that it references them being a team, we perhaps needed to see them work as an actual team more rather than individuals doing their own thing.
Maybe they're kind of assuming that you know, like the inferred knowledge sort of thing, like, oh, we're coming on from the cartoons here. You've seen what you think the gang are like and you know, how they've always been, but we're going to start here and it's going to go in a different direction sort of thing. Could be that.
That's an interesting question, actually. Is it a sequel?
To the cartoon.
Is it a sequel to the cartoon? Because
what happened next, sort of thing.
Yeah, if it is, then that makes sense. I've never even thought of it that way. That's a really good point.
Thank you. Top analysis.
The other bit, I suppose, comes down to, we've touched on this before, when a film is for kids and adults alike, sometimes there's a jarring between the two. Mm-hmm. There are bits in this where I remember watching it thinking, I don't know why that's in there, apart from to put in the trailer. So like, there's a bit where Scooby's on a quad bike.
Mm.
And it's like, it's definitely just in there for the trailer. It doesn't add anything to the film.
To be a moment of action, yeah.
But actually, you know, maybe as a kid you'd love that. Scooby-Doo riding the quad bike. Who am I to say a kid wouldn't love that? I probably loved it. And then there's another thing that then bleeds into the humour, I suppose. So like, there's quite a few fart jokes in this, right?
Oh, yeah, there is.
Now, I never really have been a massive fan of fart jokes, even when I was a kid. I've always been... I don't know what it is. I've just never found them that funny. I found them funnier when I was younger, but I find them a little bit irritating now. I guess because of the way comedy has moved, things have become referential, haven't they, too? Mm-hmm. So you think of like something like Tropic Thunder that's referring to fart humour and things like that as being, you know, it's not that funny or whatever. I don't know. I suppose ultimately I don't find farts that funny. Mm-hmm. Maybe I've got a tin ear for fart jokes. I don't know. And the final thing, and this just comes from me reading about the film, is that I think there was a bit of studio meddling in this where I think the original idea was going to be a little bit more adult, and I think that they cut a few things. I think I ended up following, a bit like yourself, down a bit of a rabbit hole. When I saw that it was the 20th anniversary, I think there was a couple of articles knocking about the production of it at the time, which is where I got the thing about them disowning the film. And one of them was that I believe in the original script, Velma was gay.
Okay, yeah.
I think it's a bit of a shame that they cut that out.
Yeah.
But, you know, time hasn't been kind to that, has it, at the time? If they made it now, it would be different. It's 20 years later. But I do think they could have done something with that and they didn't. So maybe that was a bit of a missed opportunity. But not loads. I have to say there was not loads that I didn't like. A lot of it is down to my own tastes, really, as opposed to actually not liking anything. The only real point I had was probably them working as a team sort of thing. But anyway, what about you? I don't think there'll be loads from you either, but you never know.
I mean, there's a few things, but none of them are like huge offenders and they're not, you know, massive points that really put me off the film. So it's a little bit male-gazy when it comes to Daphne and then later on Velma, as sort of she starts to wear less clothes as she gets, like her soul's taken out of her body and then she's sort of possessed by the alien soul
which makes you wear less clothes.
Everybody
knows that, Alice.
You get really hot, right?
Yeah.
So obviously it didn't bother me a great deal and I appreciate that it is a product of its time, but I definitely noticed it and I think you would have to be blind to not notice it. I could have done without the burp and fart off that Shaggy and Scooby have.
That's the very scene I was thinking of.
Yes, so that... grosses me out a little bit too. Like I know I've mentioned before, you know, it's difficult to watch Swiss Army Man at times, but I got through it. But yeah, I'm not huge on fart and burp humor, but you know, Shaggy and Scooby are pretty cute together, so I'll let that slide.
And kids do love it, don't they? Do you know what I mean? I can
imagine you, little 12-year-old Josh, like giggling to himself in the cinema when that comes on, right? Definitely.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. The other thing as well was, right, so you know when they do the body swap sequence when kind of all their souls go into each other's bodies?
I know what you're going to say.
Oh, interesting. Well, we'll see. I don't know if you do know what I'm going to say, but here we go.
Oh, maybe not. Maybe not.
So with that, my point was that I could have done with more of it.
Oh, I thought you were going to say,
say
the bit where Fred says I could look at myself naked.
Oh, no, I didn't mind that
because
really at all.
I just thought it was going to be leading on from the male gaze point.
Oh, yeah,
yes, I could actually. Yeah, you're right.
I could have done with more of it. I remember the sequence being a bit longer when I was a kid. And I actually find it really funny because you've got, it's when Fred is acting like Daphne is in his body. Yeah. I just found that really funny. And it means they're all having to really give proper good physical performances to become these other characters, right?
It's even funnier when you know that they're married as well.
Oh, yeah. Like, aren't they cute, man?
Imagine like, well, they're one of those, like, not, I know, you know, we don't really do celebrity gossip and stuff, but like, they're one of those couples who seem to have met, actually fallen in love, and had just stayed married.
They're still, yeah, just still
like,
married.
Just married.
So,
like,
do you reckon they met on the set of this film?
I don't know. I'd have to dig out a copy of 2001 Heat or something.
Yeah,
something
yeah.
Like
OK Magazine. But all the goss on Sarah Michelle Gellar and her new beau. Yeah. I thought it was a really funny moment, and I know it's been done before, and you might, you know, think now, oh, it's been done to death. But I just think they could have got more comedy out of there. So I would have liked even just a few more minutes of them being in there, because they only really get about a couple of sentences each as
yeah,
the other
long,
person.
Not long, is it?
And I thought it was good. Maybe
and they're all so good. They're all so good in it as well. They definitely, there's a real good chemistry between the four of them. I think it's a shame, really, that it got the reception that it got, which we'll come on to.
Yeah. Some of the music I thought was a little bit annoying, and it did that thing where the music was playing almost 100% of the time. And it was just a bit like, sometimes it can just be a bit much for me just because I notice it. The other thing as well that I've just thought of now. So when they get on the plane to go to, is it Spooky Island?
Obviously, Spooky Island.
Where all this stuff's happening. So obviously, Scooby-Doo is having to dress up as a lady. Like, he's got a big flowery sun hat on and he's wearing a dress. He's playing Shaggy's grandma or something, isn't he? But there's a cat on the plane. Like, there's a cat sat on a woman's lap. And
that's
I'm like,
true. So
there's
why,
a cat there.
Why,
so obviously, they let animals in the, you know, in the
why
cabin.
Why dress him up as an old woman?
Why not just have him come on as a dog, right?
And all old women, of course, look like Great Dane dogs.
Indeed. I've been saying this for years, Josh, I'm telling
you. You've always said that.
Always said it. It's a quote from me. So I just thought that was a bit inconsistent. I don't know if it's because if they behave better on
flights. It's a bit of a convenience, isn't it? It's like, we need Scooby to bark at something. So,
yeah.
Like, why couldn't it have been someone watching a film with a cat on?
Yeah, I think smart, Josh. See, this is what
we should have made Scooby-Doo.
We
are much better than highly successful writer James Gunn.
That was kind of it. Like, all pretty small fry, to be honest. Like, nothing that really put me off.
The positives outweigh the negatives, you think?
Oh, definitely. Certainly. I had fun when I see it the first time, and I had fun this time, and I was looking forward to watching it as well. Yeah, all round good time from me. So we'll move on now then to talking about the critical reception. Now, I have seen it as this film was already on my list, so I'm not going to lie to your listeners.
Yeah.
I'm not going to
pretend to guess
when I know the answer. So I do know what it's got. But Josh, you say you've picked this because you reckon it's underrated, not underseen. So go on, tell us a bit
about
this.
Let's have a look then. For the listeners at home then, in that case, so at the time of recording on IMDb, it gets 52%. Mm-hmm. Well, 5.2, so 52%. The audience on Rotten Tomatoes give it 39%. And the critics, those miserable gets, give it 32%, which averages out at the time of recording at 41%. Alice, that is bullshit.
I mean,
there's Scooby-Doo. It's a Great Dane-sized dog shit, is what that is.
It is. It's so, I mean, screw the critics anyway, right? But the audience, have surprised me. They did surprise me.
Who's going online and slagging off Scooby-Doo?
I know, yeah. Do you just not get the jokes? Like, are you so illiterate when it comes to the wonder of the cinema that you just don't get how funny it is?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the easiest ones we've ever had. 41%. You know, it isn't perfect, but bloody hell, it's a good time, and it's not 41%. It's just not.
No,
I think it's criminally underrated. What about you?
I completely agree. What would you give it, do you think?
Oh, it's definitely a 7 and above.
Oh, do you reckon? Yeah, I was going to say a high 6, but oh no, you're a bit more generous.
So let's say 7. Even it out at a 7.
Yeah.
So there we go, another one in the underrated vault. Is there a criminally easily. Underrated vault?
Let's create a new one, I reckon.
In there with Green Lantern and Speed 2.
And Grease 2 and Speed 2.
Maybe.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah, maybe.
Stuck in yourself.
So it's your turn to pick next week. Are we doing Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed?
Oh, how did you know? You see the list.
What are we doing?
So we're going to do something, Josh, that we're probably going to have a quick conversation about after this episode just to double check that it can be found online or on a streaming service, right?
Right, okay.
But we're going to do a film called Solomon and Gaynor. You've definitely heard of it. I mean, I can tell by your face that you've definitely heard of it.
Yeah, definitely. I know it well. Okay, well, if we can find it.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll have to have a quick look.
Solomon and Gaynor.
Yeah, and if we can't find it, we will have re-recorded this.
And you'll never ever hear this. You'll never know. So, you know, whatever. Okay, well, in that case, join us next week when we'll be talking about Solomon and Gaynor. If you'd like to get in touch with us, it's filmsandthatpod@gmail.com. We're on all the social medias if you search for Just Films and That on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Please give us a follow, see what we're up to. We always try and put some content out there. And if you do get a chance, if you give us a little rating or review wherever you get your podcast, it would, of course, be greatly appreciated. As well as in your ears, we're also on your telly boxes, aren't we, Alice?
We are indeed, for the new extended time of 3 minutes, you lucky things.
A whole extra minute.
So every Friday on the local TV network, you can find us from 6 p.m. talking about films. So if you live in Birmingham, Bristol, Leeds, Liverpool, or the northeast of England, you can find us on Channel 7 on Freeview. Or if you live in North Wales or South Wales, you can find us on Channel 8 on Freeview. We're also on Channel 195 on Sky across the country. That's every Friday night from 6 p.m.
Yes, there we go. Lots of ways to see us and get in touch. Let us know what you'd like us to cover. All that remains to be said then, Alice, is thank you very much for joining me as ever. And it's goodbye from me. Cheerio.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has 2 limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go Facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code MOM.